My guest today is Jim Hurst. Jim is one of my favorite people, one of my favorite guitar players, one of the best guitar players I've ever heard, ever seen. The occasion for today is ostensibly that Jim has a new single, It's a Beautiful Day, but really, I just miss him, and you'll find out as you listen to the rest of the program. I just get along with Jim great, and I'm always happy to hear from him. I hadn't talked to him in a while with everything that's going on. New song, It's a Beautiful Day. We'll talk about some other songs. He'll introduce some other music for you throughout the program. But Jim Hurst, I miss you, man. We'll catch up again, I promise, at some point, and we'll bring it all back to Unreal Bluegrass again. So this is It's a Beautiful Day, brand new song by my guest Jim Hurst. There to the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a brand new song from my guest today. The song was It's a Beautiful Day, and it's always a beautiful day to talk to my guest. One of my favorite guitar players, songwriters, singers, people, Jim Hurst is joining us today. How you been, man?
I'm doing great, Steve Martin, and thank you for playing that, man. It is a beautiful day right today. I'm sitting here outside of Nashville, Tennessee. It's gorgeous, but even if it was raining, I feel good about the new year, and I'm happy to be on your show today.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, it's been so long since I've seen you. You and I can probably count the last time that we actually met, and you performed, and I was entertained, which is every time I see you. But it's been too long, and then you throw the pandemic in there, and it stretches everything out more. But I've never seen Jim Hurst, whether it was alone, with a trio, with Missy Raines, who you had a wonderful relationship for years as a recording artist and performer, that I wasn't absolutely dazzled by your guitar playing, your songwriting, and your singing. I just enjoy the joy that you have playing those things, too. So I'm so glad you have a new tune. It's a good opportunity to chat with you for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that song, I hope that people will, you know, first of all, it's got my name on it. I wrote it. But, you know, it's one of those songs I think people will hear it and they'll want to sing along and they'll tap their feet and maybe it'll put a smile on their face. And I'm hoping that, you know, that positive mental attitude will help them walk out the door in the morning or evening or heading toward the hospital or the police department or an airplane cockpit or wherever they go with a little lighter step. That's what I'm hoping.
Well, you know, we're getting to that point where I think maybe we can see around the bend just a little bit that the storm isn't quite so horrible there. There might be a light, you know, at the end of a very long tunnel. But I think this is a great song for this time period, which is the spring of 2021. It's a great song as you described it. It's also, I think, knowing you, Jim, I think you wrote this for this time period, not for this day, but because we are starting to come out of a nationwide funk. And I know musicians have had a really hard time, but you still have to always remember to thank every day what you have. In the sun, if it's the sunlight in your backyard in a nice spring day, you're thankful for that.
Yeah, and if it's rain, you know, if you have it's a rainy day and you're sitting on the porch or inside looking out, it's still a pretty day.
Isn't
you know,
nice?
I mean, and I think if you wake up in the morning, you can see yourself in the mirror and recognize yourself without having to sing happy birthday to yourself. Right there starts off a good day. You know what I'm saying?
I agree with you 100%. I love your attitude, and I agree with you 100%. Like, you know, as best as you can, make every day a beautiful day, and that's what you're singing about. And as I said, Jim Hurst always has fun in the songs that he records and always has fun in the performances. And is a great communicator with audiences, and whatever size audience you can fit and be next to Jim and hear him play, you need to do it. And hopefully that'll all loosen up soon. So what have you been doing? But with everything shut down, I assume you're like most other musicians and performers. You just have limited availability to get out in public.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to stay safe and healthy with my wife. We got grandbabies, we got kids, and I don't want to jeopardize any of that. I mean, to be honest with you, Steve, we haven't been able to spend a whole lot of time with any of our family because of concerns of COVID, you know. And, you know, some people don't take it serious, and that's their right. You know, I find that, you know, the rest of us that really take it serious have to take it a little more serious because of our concern that it could spread to us. And those of us that are older that have any kind of immunocompromising situation, it can be a life or death decision, you know, to do anything. Yeah. And, of course, you know, the event producers, you know, the venues, and all the folks that had me booked, actually last year was going to be a pretty good year, almost a banner year for me as far as how many dates and how much work I was doing. I had dates on the book for my solo show. I had dates on the book for my Jim Hurst Trio. I had work with Claire Lynch as a duet. I had work with Claire Lynch Band. I had music camps. I had, man, it was going to be a really, really good year in the middle of February, you know. And the last date I did, I think, was a music camp down in Florida, a banjo camp down there, the Suwannee Banjo Camp, March 19th, I think it was. That was my last weekend of work,
you know,
and the rest of the year was completely annihilated.
As of the date of our conversation and the time that this will air, this is almost a year to the lockdown, which was like a brick wall. I mean, there was no lead up to it. I remember this, Jim, you helped me. I remember it was first hit the NBA. And they're like, well, what are we going to do? And all of a sudden, the NBA, within days, everything shut down. Everything and every music venue, and people were on tours, and they just came back home.
Yeah. And, you know, not having the COVID is the win, you know. I mean, not spreading it to someone else is also a win, but you're not really privy to that information. But I imagine if you did find out that you spread it to someone and they really had a hard time with it or worse, I think you would remember that, too. And I feel like, you know, I heard on radio one time, Steve, the guy was he was part of the, I think he was CDC, but he said, you know, if everybody would stay home and wear a mask and do this for 6 weeks to 2 months, then COVID doesn't transfer from one host to another. And if COVID doesn't transfer, it dies. And I'm thinking, well, that makes sense to me. Why don't we stop spreading it, and then it'll go away? But, you know, every time you turn around, there's a bus party, or there's a big celebration after a sports event, or there's a political rally or something, and it keeps spreading. And, you know, I think the medical people have done a fabulous job of trying to keep this under control, trying to maintain their civility while they're working endless hours to try to help people. I told Judy last night, my wife, I said, we need to really make sure that the medical people that are in the trenches with this, the rest of us stay home. The medical people are in the trenches with this, and they have to deal with this every day. And I don't know how to say thanks, but I can tell you that they've done their job. That's the only thing I can ask for, you know.
But I agree with you.
I'm looking forward to change. I'm looking forward to be done with. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, everything you've said, I'm in agreement with. I've been ultra conservative because I'm older and I have other issues, risk issues that are not just connected to age. There are other risk issues that you have to take into account. And I'm on that conservative end with you. Is let's just wait it out as best we can. And, you know, and that way we can – now, our daughter, I will tell you this, I've told you before, works in the hospital. So she's been there this entire last year with all of the floods in the emergency room and all the people coming in. And she got her shots right away because they're there, you know, until the last person comes in. They're still working, so she'll come home late at night. And I know she comes home with those marks on her face that you see on the people that are wearing those masks all day in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, that's just a strain on everybody there, and they just keep going back and going back. So I'm with you. I give great thanks to those people who are putting up that fight because it's like trying to nail Jell-O to a tree. you know, unless everybody cooperates, you just can't get it to stand still. So I agree with you, and that's why this song is so perfect for this time.
Well, I hope that people will get it as a positive, you know. To go back one time, Missy told me the comment about doing something like this is like herding cats, you know. You can't get it to happen. But you know what? I think if our positive mental attitude meets the road with us and we do what we can to take care of ourselves and each other, then things will work out good. I think so.
And by the way, I neglected to mention your fine work with Claire Lynch. Of all the many times I've seen you with Missy by yourself with the trio, I've also seen you with Claire, and love her music here on Unreal Bluegrass, and she's a frequent guest whenever she dares to come back from Canada. I know she got married and moved up there a long time ago.
Yeah, I think she's been up there, I want to say, 4 years.
At least. First time she was on the show with me and said she was married, and I said, she was married in Canada, and I was kidding her. I said, you know, that's not recognized in the United States. She said, what? I said, I'm just telling you, you're going to have to get it certified. It's not that we don't recognize it. I was just, I made it up just because it just got married within a week or so.
Probably because it was you, you took it seriously.
Yeah, maybe. So anyway, but yeah, you're if you've seen Claire Lynch in the years, you've seen Jim, and you're always with a good crowd, and you're always with good people, not just good performers. I like your infectious attitude, which you just described, that relates to this predicament that we're in. But I will tell people that Jim's always like that. I've seen him in a lot of situations, and Jim Hurst always has a good attitude about the music and about communicating with the people. And whoever you see him with, you're going to feel good, and you're going to hear great music. And I maintain this too, Jim. I've said this all along. You are one of a handful of the greatest guitar players I've ever seen. And I've seen guitar players in all kinds of genres of music, jazz and bluegrass, blues, you name it, rock. You're one of the best guitar players I've ever seen.
Well, Steve, that means a lot to me, buddy. Thank you so much. I've been blessed to do what I love to do for a living until, obviously, until the last year or so. But, you know, I just, ever since I was 4 years old, I've had a guitar that I could put my hands on, and I've played around with other instruments, but guitar has been my buddy for so long. You know, I feel like I don't want to copy anybody. I started out maybe trying a little bit to be like Clarence White in the flat pick world. Mm-hmm. And then I went over and started learning some Merle Travis and some Chet Atkins. And I spent probably most of my formulative years as a learning, you know, of course I'm continuing to learn, I hope, but trying to mimic Jerry Reed, trying to learn the songs that he wrote and instrumentals and vocal songs. And I met him at the age of 14. He said, son, he says, I'm really happy that you really like what I do. He said, but you know, nobody's going to pay you to be Jerry Reed. I'm having a hard time doing that myself.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that because I play a little bit of music. It gets less and less all the time, but I watch hands of performers of stringed instruments. And your right hand is very distinctive. You have a combination of all those things, and yet it works for you and for the music that you're playing.
Yeah, and even when I play, I'm a good banjo stand on stage sometimes, and the banjo will ring out when I'm holding it. But you know, when people look at my banjo playing, I had Bill Evans once ask me. He says, "What are you doing?" And I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I'm playing banjo." He said, "I know you're playing great." He said, "But I don't see what you're doing with your right hand, because as a banjo player, you know, there's a certain way that." Mm-hmm. Earl and J.D. and all these people, Tony Osborne, all these greats, they do it a certain way. They put the little finger and that ring finger down on the head, most of them. Mm-hmm. And they go back and forth, and that I don't know if that's a depth gauge for them or if that's a head dampener or a combination of all that stuff. I haven't ever asked them. And I had Ned Lubrecki ask me the same thing. He says, how do you – because we were sitting around. We were bunkmates at a music camp, both Bill and I at one point, you know, at a camp, and the same thing with Ned. And we were doing ground speed, which is an Earl Scruggs instrumental, with Ned. And I'm playing the best I can play. I'm clutching around there, you know, as a guitar player with a banjo in my hand. And he's not watching my left hand. He's watching my right hand.
Yeah.
You know, he's watching my picking hand. And we get done. He goes, I don't know how you do that. I said, what do you mean? He goes, it's similar to what Bill said. He says, I can see that you're playing. I can hear the notes. But he says, I don't know how you're doing it because I can't see your hand.
That's
you know?
Right. That's right. That's
well, I got this meat hook, and it's all kind of clammed over, you know. And as a thumb-picking guitar player sometimes, that's part of my banjo style is because I didn't learn to have that thumb extended out there, you know. I didn't learn to place my ring finger, my little finger on the head of the banjo to play it. And it's probably a good thing because I think my little finger is a little shorter than most. So when I place it down, my hand has to go backwards. It doesn't fit right. But, you know, playing music, making a joyful noise, I don't care how you do it. It's a lot of fun. And I love challenging myself with banjo. I can tell you that.
And let me just add this, too, to the listeners. I'm talking to Jim Hurst, who is par, you know, incredible guitar, but he's also, I've seen you do it. I've seen Jim play banjo, and yes, and even Bill Evans, who he's talking about, is a friend of mine. Ned Lubrecki is a friend of mine. They can't see what you're doing, but I can tell you from back in the audience, Jim Hurst is a great banjo player. I've seen you do it. I've seen you do it, and I also know that you think very, very highly of Sonny Osborne's playing and all the tone that he has, and great respect for him. I know that for a fact.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, it's his fault that I play banjo. And I was able to tell him that on phone call one time.
Oh, good.
I said, man, I've been listening to the Osborne Brothers since I was probably, 12 or 14 or something. My family just said that was our number one band when I was growing up. I told him that, too. And actually, when we did a family reunion, I think about 6 years, 7 years ago, the number one song on the soundtrack for the Pixie montage was one of the Osborne Brothers songs. And it was just... my favorite memory was what the song was. And I told Sonny that his banjo work on all those songs, with those slow songs.
Yeah.
It's just, there's something about what he does on a slow song. I'm just talking about it. I get chill bumps.
I know.
Because Sonny, he's the man. JD as well, as Earl Scruggs, and, of course, all the new modern people. You know, there's some really fine instrumentals banjo when they do
it. But they don't touch that lyric like he does with his left hand in those ballads and those slower. He does something special on his left, and it's all his stuff. He's not copying anyone because Earl didn't do it. JD, he just does that beautiful backup, and you're right. That's overpowering.
I got to ask him about his little portion of a break in Someone Before Me. And those of you that know the song know what I'm talking about. He does this real lyrical, somewhere between steel guitar and piano effort on banjo. And it's as perfect as anybody could ask for. It's awesome.
Well, what did he say when you asked him about it?
He said, I got a little of this from listening to Pig Robbins. You know, Hargis Pig Robbins, the famous blind piano player.
Yeah.
And then he also got some from Buddy Emmons.
Sure, the steel guy. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, he didn't say that they created the solo for him, but those techniques, those melody kind of ideas, I think, is what he was trying to tell me. And, of course, Sonny's always been one of my favorites, but, what a monster. He's a monster.
He absorbs
but
it all.
But it's his fault that I play banjo. That's why I picked it up.
That's good. Well, since we have this new song, I'm talking to Jim Hirsch, we played It's a Beautiful Day, I'm guessing that there's going to be an album release at some point to follow up with the release of the single, or at least
there's
far-off plans.
That's a good question. First of all, I put the song out because I feel like at this time of this year, it's a perfect time for this to come out. If people like it or they don't, at least they have a chance to hear it. And not for advantageous reasons for making more money. It's just the mentality on the theory of the song, the whole vibe of it.
Right.
I think it'd probably go a long way for people right now. It was actually recorded a couple of years ago by a band out of Mid-Atlantic area, Circa Blue.
Sure.
They recorded the bluegrass version of it. And I wrote this song back in 17. I wrote it in 17 on I was out in Wenlock, Washington for a festival and some guitar workshops out there. And that was when all those fires were going on out there in the West. Montana and Idaho and Washington, Oregon. And, of course, it was in the southwest of Canada. And the smoke and the ash was blowing down far south as Wenlock. And it was hot, and it was really scary, and I could smell smoke. For the one day that I flew in, the next day I was at the festival. That's the way it worked, although the festival was pretty insulated with all the trees and stuff. But the following morning, I got up, and there was no smoke, no ash, clear sky, clear. There was no smell of smoke. I couldn't believe it, and it out of my face came, "It's a beautiful day." And it was about a 40-minute ride from the hotel to the festival grounds, and when I got on the festival grounds, I picked up my dictaphone that I recorded it into and listened back to it, and I made a couple of changes and added a couple things, and then maybe a couple more tweaks as time went on, but that whole song was probably written in less than an hour.
That's a good sign.
And, I don't do that often. When I do, I'm really happy about it, because sometimes you just got to whittle on them until you find out what it is. But, I don't want to wear you out with this, but really write a song with a chorus that people can sing along to easily. I write the song based on the influences and the inspiration and maybe the guitar work, and that's how I come around to things like Stephen's Deep Coal Mines and, different things. I write, Kentucky Sunrise Waltz. I write those because of the feeling I get. And, you know, maybe the lyrics come from an imagination, like Stephen's Deep Coal Mines was looking at maybe what a reporter would do if they went into the mountains and talked to somebody about the mining industry, you know. And so when I came in with this song, I'm thinking, you know, it's about time I write something like this. And it was a beautiful day, you know, most of my life. And so why not share this with people? And it's Circle Blue recorded. I gave them a couple of years, and then I did my version.
Great. Well, that's good.
And
so,
on this recording,
yeah, go ahead, you go.
Several hosses, I call them. Well, everybody on there is hosses. It was recorded at Scott Vessel Studio in north of Nashville, a little ways. The tracks were the guitar and bass tracks were recorded at the same time in two different rooms at Scott's, and that was Michael Geisbacher. He's a bass player with Claire Lynch Band right now, and he's also with my Jim Hurst Trio, and he did a great job. And when we were together, we had masks on. But that's the only people that had done anything in the same room at the same time. Claire Lynch did her tenor voice up in Toronto at her home there. Dale Ann Bradley did her high baritone voice over in La Follette, Tennessee, at the studio there. Shelton Fiesel sang his bass vocal at Scott Vessel's studio there in north side of Nashville, actually in Greenbrier. But he did that at a different time, and I was able to be there with him when he did it, but I had my mask on and everything. Mike Witcher's playing dobro. He's in L.A., California. He recorded his out there. And Emery Lester's playing mandolin in outside of Toronto, Canada. And the fiddle player is Fred Carpenter, and he recorded his on the west side of Nashville. So all of these people, except for me and Michael, guitar and bass, they was recorded everywhere else for this social distancing thing. And if I'd have wanted to record it with all these people, it wouldn't have happened for a long time. And so they all came together. They recorded their parts, and they sent all the parts to Scott, and he did his magic, put it all together. That's what you're listening to.
It's great. Awesome. They're all hosses, as you describe. Of course, you get Claire and Dale Ann to join in some singing. I love their voices so much.
I do, too.
You know, there's
everything
about them. Boy, that's a sweet sound.
Yeah.
Listen, you mentioned the Jim Hurst Trio, and we've talked about some of the things. But I want you to pull back from all those other. I have a lot of your albums, and I want you to maybe at this point introduce a song from some of that other great library that I have that Jim Hurst has touched. If you want to pull one up, and we'll drop that for them, we'll come back and talk to you again.
Sure. Well, to change gears a little bit, I travel around. I get a chance to travel around when it's not COVID, all over the place, you know, parts of Europe, Canada, United States. And I was up in New York City and was playing in downtown Manhattan, not too far from Ground Zero at a place, and went in there and drove all night and stayed all night that night, got up the next day and went into New York City, got a parking ticket, had to pay all the tolls to get in and out, and nobody showed up. Nobody. And that right there just I think to myself as I'm going back across the bridge after I paid $16 or whatever it was to cross it the first time, and I paid it again, and I'm going, okay, that's $32, and I'm starting to count up what I've lost. Anyway, the whole weekend was kind of a bust, except for I did something for the Westchester Bluegrass Club, not far from New York City, but out in the country, and I made a little money there and had a guitar workshop and stuff like that. But then I had to leave and go home because I didn't want to spend the money for hotels. So it was 11 o'clock at night when I left Westchester, New York, to head to Nashville.
Oh, man.
Now, that's a haul.
That's
right?
A long haul.
And as an old truck driver, I know how to do it. And, of course, I know if I get sleepy, I'll pull over in a truck stop or get a room or something. So as I'm leaving, it's rainy. It's ground fog. And the lines on the highway are not very clear, and I'm having to, you know, find my way. And the windshield wipers are going, bap, 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 bap. And I'm starting to get a little sleepy, but the windshield wipers are kind of giving me this rhythm. And so out of this, I'm telling myself, man, I got to do something. I can't fall asleep. I've got it. So I'm singing. I'm drumming on it. You know, if anybody could have seen me in the car as they passed me, they would probably thought I'm losing my mind. But I ended up writing this song for the Jim Hurst Trio CD. which was recorded in 2016. And I had to come up with a title. I call it Keep Me Awake. And it's a little different than what I've normally done, and it's Eric Alvar on bass and Nate Lee on fiddle on this.
Oh, good. All right, we'll play that. We'll play Keep Me Awake. And I'm going to come back and talk to Jim. He doesn't get away that easily, so hold on. We'll be right back after we give you this tune from the Jim Hirsch Trio, Keep Me Awake, as Jim just described it. That was it. That's the tune from Jim that you need. You know, if you're driving, you need to stay. Sometimes I slap myself, which must look really... You know, did you ever kind of smack yourself? And you open your windows, and it's like 2:30, 3 in the morning, and you're trying. You're not going to be dangerous, but you kind of slap yourself in the face just a little bit, and that works for about a mile and a half.
Yeah, it works at home too. You know, if I feel like I'm falling asleep in the chair. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, you know, I don't do that often, but I have. One thing they tell you is to get off of an exit somewhere, and just walk around your car a little bit. Just walk, yeah. make laps around the car. Another thing you can do is you can keep a toothbrush in the car without any toothpaste on it, and just massage gums, you know, and while you're driving.
I never know these truck drivers. You should put an appendix in one of your albums with truck drivers' trips from the gym.
Well, here you go. I got that one and one more from Missy Raines.
Okay.
Because she is a traveler. She's been, you know, playing music longer than me as far as a living is concerned. And the other one she does is she buys corn nuts. You know what corn nuts are, right?
Yes.
They're really hard. And
yes.
They smell awesome if you like them, and they don't if you don't like them. And at least they're really loud when you crunch them. And so Michael McLean and Missy was in the van, and she's done the toothbrush thing. And she got really... clever. She would take a toothbrush and put one of those travel covers on the bristles of it,
mm-hmm.
and she would slip that bad boy right in the vent of the car, so it'd be right there if she needed it, you know. And then she would stop at a truck stop or something, and Michael and I are convenience store or whatever, and Michael and I are trying to sleep, you know, because we're taking turns driving, and it's Michael and I's turn to sleep, so she gets in back in the van, and she's real careful about driving out all this. And she opens up a bag of corn nuts, which, first of all, the smell, the aroma of the corn nuts kind of gets my attention. And then the next thing I hear is, and it woke Michael and I up, and we were all three awake for about, I don't know, an hour or so because we were laughing about it and everything.
I'm going to write that one down.
Yeah, that's another good one.
Those are all good.
But, you know, using food, it can contribute to white swelling, so you got to be careful about that.
you know, Jim has so many great. Jim Hirsch, my guest today, and you heard the second song from him today, the Keep Me Awake. And we kind of got off on truck driving because it kind of came from that as he introduced it. But there's always good stories with Jim. He's always, because you've always been a performer. I've seen you, as I told the audience and you before, alone in duos and trios in bands. It just in wherever you see Jim Hirsch, you're going to see a great performance because he's always around great players. One of these days, and before we leave, you're going to introduce one more song for me from whatever part of the catalog you want. One of these days, and I told you this off the air, whenever I see you live, if you open it up to request, there's one song I always ask for. What is that?
Let's see. What would it be? Let's see.
Whenever I see you, I always record. You know what it is.
Mustang Sally.
And I say that out, and Jim always finds me and looks at me and kind of like, okay, and then nobody else knows what's about to happen because they're mostly a bluegrass, and it's just Jim and his guitar. I've seen you do it a couple times, but it's the most amazing version of Mustang, not been recorded by you yet, but it's the greatest version of Mustang Sally since Wilson Pickett ever dreamed.
Oh, thank you.
It's a great guitar. It's a bluesy kind of lots of bends and stuff. And one of these days, I'm going to sneak a recorder in and steal that for my own just to have it to play. So when I'm driving and I'm out of corn nuts, I can put in, I can put in Mustang Sally by Jim Hirsch. Because, man,
be careful. It'll turn you into a drummer.
Well, you know, it should turn me into something at this point. I'm willing to change.
Well, thank you. It means a lot, man. I like that old song, you know. Before I moved to Nashville, I was in a band, and we would play it the traditional Wilson Pickett way. With the horn, the keyboard player would have a patch with some horn patches and stuff, and it's got that everybody recognizes to get out on the dance floor. You know, that's what it's for, right? And so when I do it on guitar, my brother, he showed me something on guitar one time, and that intro that I use is based on what he showed me.
Okay.
And, of course, later on he says, I don't remember showing you that. I said, well, I changed it a little bit. He said, yeah, I'd say you did. And so that funky intro, matter of fact, most drummers even, if I do that, I have to count them in because they don't know where one is.
Exactly.
But when I do it solo, I ain't got to worry about it. I just got to count myself in.
That's right. That's right. That's one of the fun things of seeing Jim live is that he's so versatile and he can. And I'm telling you, if you've never seen him do it, when you shout it out, if he opens it up and I'm not there, somebody's going to have to step in and say Mustang Sal, and he'll look at you like, "All righty, then we're going to do this." It's just fun. But I, you know, everything you do, I enjoy watching and seeing how you interact. And I have so much of your music, and I have so much of your music in the library. We've chatted several times. You told me stories about being in Rosine and on the porch of Bill Monroe's house and getting to pick with some kids that just came there. Jim absorbs life and gives it back to us in songs and musical performances. And that, to me, you're just a constant touchstone for, which makes you wonder why it's been so long since I talked to you. I should have just called you and said, Jim, what's going on? But you got this new song, but I shouldn't take this long. It shouldn't take, COVID or not, it shouldn't take this long.
Well, I have to give you a little break on that one, Mr. Steve, because you have reached out and invited me to call you probably 3 or 4 times since the last time we talked on the phone. And, matter of fact, the last time we talked on the phone, I was on the road somewhere in West Virginia, and I pulled over and talked to you.
That's right.
And that was, I think I was either going to talk to you right before Sonny or right after Sonny.
Yeah.
And so you had asked me about, you know, my influences from Sonny, and that was part of that conversation. Mm-hmm. Of course, I've seen you since then, but you reached out and invited me, and I just haven't taken the opportunity to give you a call. So that it ain't your fault. It's my fault.
It's not like you're hiding. I've had your phone number for 1,000 years. Same one never changes. I'm not giving it out, but I knew exactly who to call for this. It's still in my phone.
It's BR549. I think give me a call.
But, listen, you were going to give us, you were going to intro, we don't have to be done talking, but I don't want to forget, you were going to intro one more song from the Jim Hurst Trio. And I think, I think as I write it down, it was My Own True Darling, I think is what you wanted to.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And, you know, there's a gentleman that was a friend of mine, songwriter from Lexington, Kentucky, which is the home of the Kentucky Wildcats, which I wear blue most of the time.
Yeah.
And part of it's because I love blue. The other part's because I bleed blue with UK emblems all over it or something. Anyway, especially basketball season. But he was.
Which we didn't have. We didn't have one of those this year.
No, we didn't. Yeah. And I watched them play against Tennessee, and they beat Tennessee. I'm good.
Yeah. Okay. That's right. Go ahead.
You know, I don't hate Tennessee. I don't hate any team, but I like my Cats. And if the Cats win, I'm good. Right?
All right. You were telling about a songwriter in Lexington. Okay.
Yeah, Bob Gregory is his name. And he was a friend to a lot of people. He was a radio DJ at WRFL there in Lexington, and he's written a bunch of different songs. I've recorded, I don't know, 6 or 7, maybe 8 of his. He and I have co-written a few, and sometimes he'll send me a song, and I'll say, man, I like everything except for this line or this word or whatever, and he'll say, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, what about this? And he'll either think about it or he'll say, yeah, that's fine. And then he wants me to take songwriter credit because I changed one instance, I completely refused to take songwriter credit because it was one letter in one word to change the meaning. And he just said, no, man. He says, you. And I said, no, that ain't happening. I said, if you're going to give me credit on this, I'm not recording it. That's what I said.
Oh, my.
And, but anyway, this song, he knew that I was recording, and he sent me in some different things. And this one particular song, to me, is different than a lot of everything else on that JHT1 CD, which is me and Nate Lee and Eric Alvar. Eric Alvar is a phenomenal bass player, and he also plays mandolin on this cut. He didn't play bass, he played mandolin. And Nate Lee played fiddle and mandolin on the recording, but on this song he only played fiddle. And then I play guitar on everything except for this song, and I play what I call a hybrid kind of old-time banjo on here.
Okay.
And but it's kind of like when your loved one's not with you, your brain goes haywire. at least in some cases. And that's what this whole song is about. And I just love it. And it's a tip of the hat to Mr. Bob Gregory, which we lost 2 years ago, I think. Mm-hmm. His wife, Kara Stokes, lives in Frankfurt and now, and she's still writing songs and stuff. So I'll send this out to Kara and all the people who might know Bob. It's my own true darling.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, Jim. I'm going to let you go. We'll leave with that song and that nice introduction that you gave. And looking forward to all of us being mobile and looking forward to catching you somewhere again. And we'll catch up if something else comes along this year that you want to. You always have an open invitation to Unreal Bluegrass if something else develops and you want to chat about it. I'm here, man.
Well, Steve, thank you so much, buddy. It's always a good chat with you. Yeah. I always enjoy talking about anything, banjos or Sonny or whatever, and I'm honored to be on your show, brother. Thank you so much.
I'm honored to know you and call you a friend, Jim. We'll leave with this song, and then we'll catch you down the road, I promise.
Sounds good, Steve. Take care, my friend.
Yeah, man.
All right. Bye.